Great. Well, thank you so much, Tia, for supporting our work and being able to conduct these case studies, as well as giving us an opportunity to share the lessons learned from this experience. I always say it's kind of fun to actually get paid to talk to people, and I think in public health, for those of us who have been doing this for a while, that makes it all the more exciting to be able to share. I also want to acknowledge in the crowd, we have one of our participants on our team, Kayla Ladenheim. And also, Jessica Kronstadt is not here, but she was the project director for this effort, and we also had support from Alexa Brown. So I just wanted to make sure that we acknowledged them as well. I also wanted to thank all of the state, tribal, and local health department folks and their partners who agreed to talk to us. We know how very busy you all are, and we greatly appreciate taking the time to share with us your great good work in the field. Just to give you an overview of what this project was intended to do, we really wanted to better understand how policy is used for health improvement, and we wanted to examine how are public health agencies really engaging in the policy efforts that they are undertaking. And through this discussion, we also wanted to be identifying some promising practices for public health development that could be shared more broadly so that we can really take advantage of learning from each other. And through that effort, we developed 10 different case studies, and we also have an overall cross-cutting report of the findings from those case studies. Specifically, the 10 case studies that we used in this project included one tribal public health department, 4 state, and 5 local health departments. And prior to beginning this work, we conducted a very thorough literature review to just see what is really out there and to already identify people that have been shown to be early adopters or people leading in this area. And as we were looking at putting together the different criteria to be able to select these sites, we not only looked at the different health department types, we know there's lots of different types of governance structures, specifically at the state level where you're looking at centralized, decentralized, mixed, or shared governance structures. But we all also wanted to look at the differences in geography because we know that different areas have different ways of enacting policy, as well as looking at some specific policy content areas such as environmental health, maternal and child health, chronic disease. We wanted to get a nice overview. And so we consulted with APHA, ASTO, NACHO, NELBO, the National Conference of State Legislatures, and NIHB, the National Indian Health Board, to help us identify where would be the best places for us to go to conduct these sites. We ultimately conducted 21 telephone interviews, and we used protocols that were approved by the NORC IRB. And as I said, we synthesized all these findings into 10 separate case studies and then one overview report. To give you an overview of the 10 case studies that we looked at, Bernalillo County in New Mexico, Cherokee Nation Health Services in Oklahoma, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, Ingham County Health Department in Michigan, the Jefferson County Department of Health in Alabama. We'll be hearing some more from our panelists today from those two areas. The Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, also the Massachusetts Department of Health, the North Carolina Department of Health, the Oregon Health Authority, and Seattle King County Public Health. We learned a lot of important lessons that we want to share. We put them into 5 distinct buckets, but I just want to share some top-level things that we learned that I think that all of you in public health really appreciate. First of all of these efforts can only succeed if there's support at the leadership. Without that leadership support, these types of efforts are not going to move forward. So that leadership is really critical in making these types of efforts successful. We also learned that there needs to be a culture that's fostered that really supports policy work. And for some public health departments, this is a tremendous shift in what people have traditionally done. And in order to be able to foster this culture, a number of the public health departments indicated that they provided some additional training for their staff, as well as even did some reorganization of the health department itself to really help foster this policy structure. We also learned that health departments have a whole array of the ways that they not only track policy and determine what policies they want to look at, but also how they share information with the community members that they serve, as well as the policymakers that ultimately make decisions about some of their activities and their funding and resources. Specifically, we learned that we need to engage partners. How many of you work in public health departments here? How many of you engage partners? I don't think there's ever a public health department that doesn't engage partners to be successful, because that is the foundation of what we do. And one of the things that we were told time and time again in talking to the different respondents was that you really need to think outside of the box. And traditionally, we've worked a lot with healthcare providers in our communities and those types of traditional partners, but they also challenged us to think about people like the National Rifle Association. How many of you ever partnered with NRA? Not usually one that public health goes to the table to sit with, and I'll share an example of a positive experience from that type of a partnership. They also suggested that we really look at partnering closely with different media organizations, because if we are going to be really effective in getting our message out, we need to make sure that we connect with those media organizations and develop a trust and credibility with those organizations to be able to share not only what we're doing, but then ultimately to share the successes and sometimes to share the obstacles in being able to succeed in getting policies passed. In addition, we were looking at YMCA. How many of you have ever partnered with YMCAs? That was another group that historically public health hasn't always partnered with, and that was a group that was very important. One of our examples, of course, here is working with insurance companies on motor vehicle safety issues in Colorado. You know, we certainly have shared interests in preventing injuries and reducing the costs of those injuries. Likewise, we were also very interested in finding out how different public health departments work with academic institutions. And how many of you have too many resources? One of the wonderful things that we were able to glean from our discussions was there are a lot of graduate students, and those of us, we've all been graduate students at one time or another. They are very interested and eager in being able to have practicums and on-the-ground practice projects, and that is a wonderful resource that a lot of these policy initiatives took advantage of in being able to use. The other comment that we received time and time again is don't talk in acronyms. When you're engaging partners, we have kind of a public health speak that we all understand. We can go into a room and we all know what each other's saying. But sometimes when we engage other partners, they don't have that same kind of context. So one of the comments was to be very careful on how we communicate. And that is our next lesson learned. Communicate these messages effectively. We need to describe issues that really resonate with the people for whom the policy is going to make a difference. One of the specific examples was looking at how tobacco control policies protect children from secondhand smoke, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about that later today. But when you can frame policies in a context that addresses children's health, it not only brings a lot of different parties together that may not otherwise support efforts, but it also gives you a common speaking area, common messaging for your partners. Likewise, in this era of incredible costs, we're seeing increasing costs for healthcare, we're seeing public health departments' resources diminishing. When we can go to the table and talk about opportunities where public health can make a positive difference in reducing costs and improving the health of a workforce, we have a win-win for everybody involved. So again, it's important to be able to communicate those messages effectively. And one of the most important avenues for doing that is to engage community members to share their stories or share their anecdotes. Nothing's more powerful than having a business person in your community stand up and talk about the effectiveness of a public health worksite wellness program in their organization. So really think about how you can engage your community members to share the message and enhance your communication. Likewise, we also heard that there are a number of issues related to obstacles. and you can prepare for some of those obstacles. And again, one of the ones that I thought was particularly telling was this opportunity to engage with the National Rifle Association. Although they were not embracing of widespread regulations related to firearm safety, what they were committed to was ensuring that there was safe storage of guns and firearms so that children, again, would not be harmed. So again, there's an opportunity to look at obstacles that may be there from a much larger policy perspective, but to look at ways to incrementally make change. Likewise, looking at, in Massachusetts, they developed guidance documents looking at reducing exposure to mold and moisture in schools because the total abatement of those were too cost prohibitive. But again, looking at it from an incremental so that we could celebrate success and build on that the next time there were more resources available so that we could really keep moving toward that goal of improvement. Also, we found that health departments really needed a way to share the value of data. How many of you like data? Do you use data often? It makes a whole lot of difference. You know, one of the things that we use is our golden rule whenever we gave testimony to the state legislature, we always had the anecdote, but we always backed it up with the data. And I think that's just commonplace in how we communicate. And clearly, the most successful policy initiatives and policy efforts were really driven by the data. And in this era where we have very limited resources in some of the work that we're doing, we also learned, for example, in Oregon, they looked at different issues of chronic disease, and they found that 61% of adult Oregonians have at least one chronic disease. So they wanted to develop their policies to really target a small group of chronic disease that were prevalent in their populations. They knew they couldn't tackle all of it, but they wanted to make a difference in an area and use their resources most efficaciously. There's also, in Bernalillo County, they used health and environmental data on census tract level for environmental justice policies. And again, they were able to really pinpoint where their resources and interventions were going so that they could be most effective. And I think without that data piece, it is not, you're not as effective at being able to communicate those with other folks. That concludes my overview. I know you really want to hear what's happening in the field, but if you have any questions about what we did with this project or how we conducted these case studies, please let me know. Are there any clarifying questions that I could address at this time? Well, then I'll pass it over to Doak.